Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I welcome to the show Carrie Perrin-Smith. Carrie is a training, communication, and publishing industry veteran. Like me, we have a lot in common here. She ran screaming from her corporate training and communications career over a decade ago. And even though she sometimes misses those regular paychecks, a cubicle with office supplies and equipment that she didn't have to pay for on her own, and those so much needed normal working hours that none of us have, she would not trade the entrepreneur's kill-what-you-eat lifestyle. Well, most days anyway. Carrie runs a professional speaker bureau and a publishing company that serves clients internationally. She books professional speakers, trainers, and consultants for company meetings and conferences. And she also works with business leaders who want to brand themselves as experts in their industry and build a speaking and consulting business. Very exciting stuff. I love working with authors and speakers, and I have a ton of questions. So good morning, Carrie, and welcome to the program.
Hey, good to hear from you, Denise. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, listen, I love chatting with you. I was on your show not too long ago as well.
Yeah, really good interview. You guys, if you haven't checked it out, you should. You can check that out at Business Engaged and search for Denise Griffiths. Great interview on using a virtual assistant, which a lot of people in my industry do.
Oh, yeah. And it was so funny about that interview because, you know, I went into it thinking that we were just doing a test run. Next thing I knew, it was on the air, and I went, oh, I hope I made sense.
It was awesome, and I knew you'd be awesome.
Well, you know, I know my stuff, and I love to talk about it, but sometimes I can get a little bit off track, and it's like, well, it is what it is. So anyway, thank you so much for having me on your show. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, so we'll have to do it again sometime.
Yeah, I would love to. So listen, before we go too deep into it, because I really do have a ton of questions for you, can you tell people a little bit about yourself and where they can find you on the web?
Well, on the internet, if you haven't found me, you haven't looked. I am on Twitter. Even my dog is on Twitter. He tweets about the not-so-politically correct stuff that happens at our house because the rest of me lives a very public life. But my company is called Soar with Eagles. So that's my Twitter tag. My main one that I use, tweet all my personal stuff along there as well, Soar with Eagles on Twitter. And then to follow the radio show on Twitter, it's called Business Engaged, and the Twitter ID is Business Engaged as well. And then my company website, which I'm embarrassed, it's undergoing a facelift right now. It's 10 years old, which you know.
You and me both.
You should change your website every 5 years at minimum.
Oh, no. Now it's every 18 months.
Well,
websites that I built 2 years ago are already outdated, including mine. And I look at mine, and I'm so embarrassed. It's like, oh, geez.
Oh, yeah. The cobbler's son has no shoes.
Yep, that's exactly
right. My company website is soarhire.com. And my website for my radio show, my blog, is businessengaged.com. So that's the basics about how you can find me. And I'm on Facebook and all kinds of other places, too.
Great. And you are easy to find. You're kind of like me. You can't throw a stick on the internet without hitting me. You're the same way. Okay, so let's talk about authors and speakers. As you know, I have the honor of interviewing a lot of authors and a lot of speakers, and sometimes they're doing both. And I come away from those interviews with some of the best information. And, I mean, honestly, they're great to interview because they have something to say. They wrote a book about it. So they've got plenty to say. And, you know, and there's some of these interviews, I just go, whoa, who knew? So why would people want to write a book? Why would they want to get into speaking, they both seem like fairly daunting tasks.
Well, the two are great ways to promote your business and build your personal brand. Mm-hmm. You know, for so many people, since I do work for speakers a lot, one of the things that they come to me asking about publishing services, and for them, it's about having a great calling card or to show that their information is important. And I'll tell you, having a book is evidence of your expertise. But I think the bigger thing for me, because I do work with emerging speakers a lot, that's my word for newbie speakers, is it's a revenue stream. Because
right.
when you're starting to speak, you really aren't making much money. It takes about 5 years to make what I call paycheck replacement income. And so if you have a book to sell in the back of the room, it really helps you. And being on the platform gives you an opportunity to share that expertise. And if they loved what you had to say in that 20 or 45 minutes or however long you're speaking, it gives them a chance to take some of you home or, better yet, share you with their friends.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a huge thing. But working with speakers and trainers and consultants has given me a great opportunity to see the value of that for professionals. Today, it's really important that we have content on the internet so that people who are job searchers can find us. You know, I have a lot of internet presence, and I like to write. I'm good at stringing six words together, although that's not always something I can do anytime I want to.
I know.
You have to be in the mood and the right frame of mind. And,
yeah.
Denise, one of the things I'll tell you about working with authors is that there's a reason that they're flaky. Writing a book is a really hard process, though. But what I tell people today when they are wanting to make that jump from their corporate job into branding themselves personally is that getting in front of an audience and sharing your expertise and sharing that via a blog or a book or however that content takes shape matters so much to how people view you.
Well, you know what I wanted to ask you, and that is so important, because I've come across people who will call me and they say, okay, I'm writing a book. And my first question to them, okay, is how are you promoting it? Oh, my publisher's going to promote it. Have you talked with your publisher about this? And, you know, so that I think a lot of people don't really understand, in fact, I know they don't, that mm-hmm. you have to kind of create your own platform to sell that book. To sell your services, to sell your speaker, you know, services, to get engagements.
Yeah.
And they don't know where to start. You know, they really think, okay, I wrote this great book. And oftentimes it is really a great book. But there it sits because they have no platform. So can you kind of address that? You know, what do people need to kind of, when they're thinking about this, what should they be pre-doing? What should predate the actual book publication?
You know, I think the most important thing goes all the way back to when you start writing that book and asking yourself, who am I writing this for?
Mm-hmm.
And who's going to buy it? Because those are sometimes two different audiences, because a lot of books are given as gifts. And then you are starting to write toward what that person wants to know.
Oh,
you know, who am I writing this book for, and what do they want to know, or what do they need to know? And mm-hmm. I say that coming from a nonfiction perspective. I don't work in the fiction industry. I don't even read fiction. I think there's nothing wrong with fiction. It's just, for me, I've always been really interested in real life and self-improvement mm-hmm. and what other people are doing.
Yeah, in the same way. If I read fiction at all, it's a murder mystery. I kill people off in my sleep. Very cathartic. And, you know, they make you think. I mean, if you pick up a really good murder mystery, you have to puzzle through it. So to me, it's a brain tease. But I'm like you. I read a lot of self-improvement and business books.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And I read so much online today. Mm-hmm. And reading online's really changed how I buy books. So I still believe that a book is, you know, probably one of the most important things that a person can write. But back to your question. You know, you really have to think about who's your target market when you're starting to write that book, and then ask yourself, where are they going to buy this book? So, you know, I've chosen to work in the professional speaking industry almost exclusively because I understand what happens with an audience. those dynamics when a speaker is on the platform and what is making that person who's sitting in the audience feel provoked to buy that book or tweet about that person even. They may not have a book to sell, but to give them information that they can share via someone else's Twitter influence.
Right. Well, let's go back a little bit to the platform, because I hear this a lot. You know, when an aspiring author or speaker approaches, sorry, my phone keeps ringing, approaches somebody and says, look, I want to be a speaker, I want to be an author. The first, you almost have to give your resume, don't you? You have to be able to show to them, look, I've got an audience already, and here they are. You know, I'm on Facebook, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Twitter, I'm blogging, I'm submitting to article banks. I'm out there. You know, I'm gathering up a bit of a following. Now I would like to present a book. And I think that that's a step that a lot of people just don't think to make. They write the book, but they have no means of engaging with an audience or a potential audience. And here they sit. They've got this great book. They may have 500 copies in the garage, and now what?
Yeah.
So do you see that happen a good bit?
Yeah, and that's the problem is that there's only five or six of those, you know, major traditional publishers out there, and they're interested in people who have platforms, who are pop culture icons. They're interested in that person who got a lot of media attention that was lasting. You know, the Dr. Phils and the Dr. Oz, and you know, unless you had a very public rescue from a mountaintop where you had to, you know, chew your leg off because it was trapped. I mean, seriously, it's really hard to get on their radar. They're looking for somebody who's already in the media attention. Now, they have the ability to promote for that, but there's also a lot that goes into the sale of that book. And I've heard so many people talk about, you know, getting lured in to having their book published, somebody else buying the rights, and then it just didn't go well, or it wasn't a good financial decision. And it happens when it's somebody that isn't well known. You know, basically, if you're going to end up selling your books yourself, which is the truth, pretty much all authors at the end of the day are going to be responsible for selling and promoting their book themselves.
Right. Right.
And how well you're able to create a network of marketing tools to do that will determine how successful you are. And if you know that going up front, it makes a lot of sense to look at an independent publisher like myself. And there's a bunch of us, and it's so hard to compare us. It's not apples to apples all the time. But when you look at an independent publisher, that gives you a chance to put more money on your bottom line. And that's a really good thing for speakers. It isn't good for everybody, but, you know, the truth is, even the packages for marketing that these publishers sell, I haven't heard one author say they were worth their money. So
neither have I have to be honest with you. I haven't either. You know, that really what you have to do is your due diligence. You have to find the person or the company that is best for what you need at that time.
Yeah, and I'm working with emerging speakers like I do so often. They don't have a lot of budget, and I'm a big fan of having people start where they're at. If you don't have money to work with somebody like me, you know, my favorite of all the kind of online self-publishing tools is CreateSpace, and that's the Amazon company. Because their pricing is good. It's available online through Amazon, which is the purpose. We really like to see our books on Amazon or somewhere. You know, if they publish with an independent publisher, they get this full range of publishing services, and my books are available on all the online booksellers, plus some other places you wouldn't even think sold books. And that helps, but you know, the truth is most people don't really buy that many books online anyway. They're buying based on a recommendation. So it is nice to have it somewhere like Amazon. So if somebody tells somebody about the book, they can go, oh, I'm going to go to, you know, look at the online bookstores. And Amazon usually is the one everybody knows.
Well, yeah, most of us have Kindles these days. And, I love handling books. I love the physical book. But I'm moving more and more away Oh, I do. There's something about cracking that spine for the first time. I had a publisher send me a box of books a couple of weeks ago, and I opened up this box. You should have seen me. Ran into the post office. I didn't know it was there. I grabbed this box. I didn't even make it all the way to the parking lot, and I'm trying to rip it open I'm walking because I was like, ooh, and I didn't know they were sending these books to me. It was just like Christmas. And look, I put that thing on the hood of my car. I ripped it open. I started piling books on the hood of my vehicle. People are looking at me like, what is wrong with her? Is there a diamond in there somewhere? And I was so excited. Now I get to interview. I've already interviewed some of these authors, and I'll certainly interview the others. But I'm telling you, opening that book for the first time, there's magic in that. Yeah. And you don't get the same thing from Kindle. And I'm addicted to Kindle. I have two of them. I run the battery down on one, and I pick up the other one. But there's something about a book. They're just, you can't replace that feeling.
Yeah, the industry was really strange for a while, where they were just seemed to cut all the cost out of the books, and the covers weren't even imaginative.
Oh,
it's like they said,
know.
Oh, the covers aren't important. And I
think
just
are.
In the last years, just last year or so, the importance of covers is obviously coming back. Because we just have so many new creative covers out. I think people are starting to see the value of having good page layout inside. I mean, and that's the difference between a truly self-published book and a book that is published by a professional publisher.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of chemistry that goes into the connection between the book and the reader. You know, there's things that make, 10% of people read past the first chapter, which is frightening. And I think if we really want to brand ourselves and really want to make a difference in people's lives, which is why we write the book to start with, I think that it's important for us to make sure that we do the things that makes the reader go from page to page. And, you know, what was the Wall Street Journal did a survey a few years ago and said that people make a decision whether to buy a book in 25 seconds, and it was like 7 seconds on the front cover and the rest of that was reading the back cover. You know, so part of that's the really sassy marketing copy that's on the back that makes you want to open the book, and then, you know, making sure your chapter titles are right because they're going to flip to the table of contents next, and then they're going to start flipping through the book. And I invite my authors to put in pictures if it's appropriate. I don't use graphics that are just like, you know, just to create graphics. But if there's
just
pictures that support the stories.
Right.
You know, I did a book for an astronaut. We had 90 pictures in the book. It's awesome. I mean, and in fact, the pictures tell the story if you don't want to read the stories themselves. Because, you know, some people just aren't readers. And those pictures pull them through like eye candy and make them want to go through the whole book.
Well, that's
and
how we read as children.
Yeah.
That's how we read as children. You know, the pictures would make us go, well, what's the story here? I think I know the story, but what are they telling me the story is? And it evokes that curiosity.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what an important – go ahead, I'm sorry.
The page layout is important.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have enough white space, if your words aren't blocked right, if your paragraphs are too long, I push my writers to write as close to the eighth grade reading level as they can, and then I kind of do my editing work behind them, because it's not that our society is dumb, it's that they are busy. And if you, especially working in nonfiction like I do, if you want to make change in people's lives, you need to make sure that your information is quick to understand.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you can have a really great storyline, but people will put a book down just because it's difficult to read. So that's a tough thing. That is true.
You know, and I'll do the same thing. It depends on my level of exhaustion, honestly. What book I'm going to pick up, is it conversational? Can I speed read it? Can I scan? Because that's how a lot of us read. We just scan. Or is it if it's something that I really need to concentrate on, I have to do that when I'm fresh. I cannot have had an exhausted day. So, you know, you did. But I was going to say, one of the most important parts of an actual physical book for me, after I've purchased it and I've made the decision to have it in my hands, is the spine. because I want to be able to scan my bookshelf and pick out the book that I'm looking for. And if I can't pretty much instantly see what that book is, I may move on to something different. Even though it's already there and it's my book, that spine is so important to me.
You're right. And I tell you, some of these books are not very long. And I think your book has to be 3/8 of an inch thick, at least, in order to put it on the spine, because a printing press will shift a little bit printing.
Right.
And so they won't let you put it on there unless, and it might be 1/4 of an inch, but it's really hard. And you have to think about the spine, you know. And today, I think that's what we're torn with as well, because we're seeing shorter books in the industry, which I'm glad, because I think a lot more people will go, that's doable right there.
Yeah, they're easy bite-sized chunks.
Exactly. People get really frustrated that they never finish anything. And I think it's important that we understand that and know that maybe we should be changing our writing style to be more, you know, 1,500 to 2,000-word chapters instead of 5,000-word chapters.
Right. It's not Atlas Shrugged anymore.
No.
I
own Atlas Shrugged because everybody said, oh, you need to read it, and I haven't read it. I
read it when I was 11.
Oh, my goodness.
Good
for you.
I did. I read it when I was 11. Didn't understand a word of it. But I wanted, you know, I've been reading since I was 3, so it was available, and I read it. I've read it on and off throughout my life. It's a fascinating book. But, you know, there are a lot of books like that that you pick up and go, oh, my. I mean, it took me in junior high, I think it took me 3 weeks to read Count of Monte Cristo, largely because I had babysitting duties, and I couldn't read it. But I was so frustrated.
I always envied those people that had those kind of jobs where they could read when there was nothing going on. Their job was to sit in a chair. I always had back-breaking minimum wage jobs that you had to be moving all the time or you went home.
Right. Well, my dream job that I never, ever had, you know, back in the day when I wanted a job, was in a bookstore. But I would have gotten tossed out on my ear because I wouldn't have served the customers. I would have been reading. So it's
probably a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Yeah. So keep on going about, I interrupted you, and I'm sorry, but, you know, what do people need to do if they don't really know what to write? I'm stuttering a little bit here because I have so many thoughts going on in my head.
Yeah.
People have content in their head. They have it in their heart. I mean, when they're ready to write, they write. They write on blogs. You know, they may guest blog with somebody else. To me, I think taking a lot of what you've already put out there is probably a book. Am I wrong?
You'd be really surprised how much content you do have out there. If you've been blogging, you already have a lot of information out there that you can take. And here's what I tell people. If I'm talking to someone who has been speaking for a while or is a professional or has an idea for a book or something, I tell them to start blogging.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's going to develop that. And a lot of times people don't, you know, they'll just put up a blog and it's like, oh, yeah, that's my little family blog. And suddenly they find themselves blogging on a particular topic. And then that's kind of how they end up getting an interest in growing into a book. And what I tell professionals, whether they speak or they write already or they're consultants, write on what you've earned the right to write about. One of the things that I see for people who already have an audience, and this happens in the speaking industry all the time, they'll go, oh, yeah, I speak on this, and this. But, yeah, I'm thinking about writing a book on this different topic. And this is great if you're writing the book for yourself and you have all the time in the world, but you're already building a brand somewhere else. And there is a group of people out there that you've earned the right to speak to on a topic that you've earned the right to speak on. This is too much work to do it as a labor of love. This is a revenue stream, and I probably think that's my biggest calling, is to keep reminding people a book is a revenue stream.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking is a revenue stream, and, you know, anything that you do, it's a revenue stream.
I don't know how people can miss that. I mean, clearly you're doing it because Number one, you love it. Number two, you have a lot to share. But if you're not doing it for profit, what the heck? I don't get
I know.
That.
Well, and in going through that book writing process, if they want to write that book on that topic, I ask them, if you are so compelled to write that book on that topic, perhaps you should be speaking on that topic. What do you think?
Right.
And especially since I'm challenging them to go back and look at who they're going to sell the book to start with, they're already going to be studying what the needs and interests are of those people. Wouldn't that make it easier to market yourself as a speaker or consultant?
Yeah.
To that same audience?
It would. Yeah. And it's just
logic. If you understand how they think and what their pain is and where they go for their information and how they buy, that's going to allow you to marry the two together. And marketing easily takes half of your time, no matter what little endeavor you're doing for your business. And you just don't have that much extra time if you're marketing a business that falls outside where you're branding yourself currently. So that's the biggest thing right there. You know, again, I keep going back to know what their pain is so that you can write about that.
Right.
And be very specific. It's going to make it so much easier when you go to write that marketing copy for your website, for that book. You know, it's just, and I see so many times, especially in the speaking industry, is people will go out and speak on a topic, and they go speak to everybody else, and they end up winding back around to the audience that they've earned the right to speak to, even if it's maybe a topic that's different. People value that, but I don't know what happens in the mind of a professional when they're leaving their corporate job and saying, oh, these people here I don't have anything they need to hear. Well, of course you do. You have a lot that they need to hear.
Yeah. And I get the same thing. People say, well, because when I'm talking with new clients, you know, they say, well, I need a website. And I think you know me well enough to know that when I build a website, it's a turnkey solution, meaning that I've set up their social media if they didn't have any, meaning that, you know, we've already pre-populated a few blogs, which I think is so important. And I always tell them you need to blog consistently at least 3 times a week. And I can just about feel them on the phone clapping their hand over their heart going, oh, my God, I'm going to have a heart attack. And invariably, they will say exactly what you just said to me. I don't have anything to say. What?
Sure you do. If you can,
it's like you're kidding me. Like, right. It's insane.
They don't see their freaking genius.
No.
You know?
It's like
they don't see how totally awesome that they are.
I know. I said, listen, we just had a really great 2-hour conversation where we're brainstorming and you're telling me, and both of us are getting excited and we're pulling stuff out. What do you mean you don't have anything to talk about? I mean, I get a little bit cranky about it. It's like, listen to yourself. You've got some great stories. You've got all of this experience.
Yes.
You've got plenty to talk about. But I think a lot of it is based in fear, and I think a lot of it is self-deprecating. So nobody wants to listen to me. Sure they do. Well
and
case,
I'll tell you,
they do.
I'll tell you, a friend of mine, I think he is so brilliant, and he's accomplished, and he's far along in his career. I mean, he's in his 50s. He's well-established. It makes a very successful living as a consultant. The guy doesn't have a book, and you know why? His fifth grade teacher told him he was a terrible writer.
Oh.
Does that not break your heart?
It does.
Yes.
Oh.
I've told him, and I think he's a great writer, but he's still doing book reports last time I saw. Don't write about somebody else's stuff.
Right.
Write about your expertise. Anyway, it kills me because there's people out there that go, I'm not a great writer. And, you know, that's what editors are for.
Mm-hmm.
That's what ghostwriters are for. But the truth is, if you can get your stuff down on paper good enough, an editor can pick it up from there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You don't necessarily need a ghostwriter.
No. My clients will send, they'll say, I don't want to blog. I'll say, listen, send me something, a part of an article, a stream of consciousness.
Yes.
I'll pick it up from there.
An audio recording on your phone.
Audio, exactly. Because a lot of people speak better than they write, so they just dictate it. And I was like, exactly. That makes sense. So there's ways to get that word out on paper, I'm telling you.
Exactly. With blogging, the thing to remember that a blog doesn't have to be 1,200 words or 900 words or 500 words. It could be 100 words. I've seen people use their blog to just start the conversation. If they allow comments on their blog posts, they may write a question, and that's how they start the conversation. I mean, I have Facebook posts that are longer than some blog posts.
Me too.
You know? Yeah. I mean, to me, it's just about getting content out there, however I need to do it. And thank goodness Facebook keeps expanding what we can do with that.
Right. But you have to engage. So you have to engage, you know, through social media. But then you can take that social media, because honestly, some of the best conversations I've ever had in my life have been with people on Facebook.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them are just so darn funny that I'll actually copy them into my journal.
Right.
I mean, they're just fun. And from those things come great ideas sometimes. Because you're in essence collaborating with other people. You may be doing it through humor. You may have asked a question and gotten a ton of answers. You may have said something that was, you know, maybe a little bit controversial and got your butt handed to you, but there are answers in there too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, pay attention to that, because you're sitting at your keyboard and you're actually collaborating unwittingly with other people. Listen to what they have to say. They'll tell you what they need. And
that's
write
exactly
about it.
Right.
If it's your experience, if that's your where you are supposed to be, write about what you're getting from these other people.
Exactly. Well, and when I'm looking for content and ideas, yeah, because I've got this business radio show, and sometimes I'm scrambling for content. And, you know, I've got a lot of knowledge and expertise, and I could go out on the internet and pull some quotes. But, like for instance, one day, physical cliff hit our family hard, and I posted on Facebook, you know, hey, what are you guys doing? I've already cut where I need to cut, and I need to cut some more out of our budget. What are you guys doing? And I got, like, 50 answers from people. And so what I did is I turned them into the segment for my radio show.
Exactly.
And I did 2 or 3 minutes and summarized and, you know, gave the people credit and said, hey, this is what this person did. And I thought it was great. I just posted a question in the last couple of days on my Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, about what makes you feel not confident. And where's your blind sides? If I were to address this in a book, because I decided I was going to write a book. I talked about that in my radio show that aired this morning. And I'm going to talk about that on my radio show ongoing, so it will hold me accountable.
Me too. My business coach is, you know, I've been telling her, okay, when I first started with her, I said, I have 3 bags that I want to work on with you. And she said, what in the world is a bag? And I was thinking, well, it's because I'm Southern. She doesn't understand me. And then she said, no, I really don't. And I said, it's bags, big-ass hairy goals. And she just lost it. She said, excuse the language on the radio. But that's what
that's how we talk here in the South. So we're all Southern.
Yeah, we just, off you know,
polite.
We just spell it out for you. But one of those is that I want to write a book, and she said, I'm going to hold you accountable. She said, start talking about it on your radio show, and I went, ugh. So here I am. I'm doing the same thing. Yeah. We can hold each other accountable.
Well, and I'll share with you what my plan is, and I'll take you through that process pretty quickly if I can.
Okay, great.
So it'll help
please.
You as well.
Yeah.
Okay, well, before I say it, let me finish up with goals or the blog posts. What I tell people is to blog first and then use those blog posts as a foundation for your chapters in your book and your topics. You can piece them together.
Right.
So with
that
said, that'll be something left out, because I don't have some material that is already written on this. I write on my topic of self-confidence, but I've kind of wrapped it around my other work on building business relationships. So let's pretend I have nothing written. So I would sit down and I would brainstorm. I choose my topic and I would brainstorm all of the topics that need to fall under that main topic. So say in the instance of, you know, confidence, I would come up with my topics, and I came up with 20 topics that address the issues that people in business have, that job searchers have, that individuals have when they're trying to get out and meet other people. And then I might put those all on a sheet of paper. They might be pieces of paper that I've thought of over time, and I just shove them in this folder. They could be written on anything from napkins to toilet paper, and they live in this folder, and I'm going to put them all together. So then I'm going to organize them.
Mm-hmm.
And I might piece those topics. Some of those topics will be paired together in a chapter. Others of those will be in an individual chapter. And then I'm going to organize those. I use mind mapping a lot. I prefer that
me
as
too.
A technique.
Yeah, me too.
If you don't know how to use it, I use it for every article I write. Blogging has helped me get away from that a little bit because you are really getting in the practice of putting stuff down and kind of organizing it. But mind mapping, when you're working on a project as big as a book, is so helpful. So I organize that, and then on my mind map, I number those in the order that they need to go in the book, and then I sit down and type up a Word document with each of those heads and subheads there in the order that they go. And there my Word document lives on my computer or my laptop or wherever, and then whenever I feel like writing on that topic, or whenever I feel like writing, I pick a topic and go. And that's how I get the content built initially. Mm-hmm. I can move it around, but I'm not worried about having to go in order. I am just worried about getting a brain dump on paper.
Right.
Don't worry. Yeah, and definitely you don't want to edit. Fix your typos if you want to, but worry about getting the content down on paper. What happens is the writing process is a much more, for most of us, a much more creative process. When we get into editing and formatting and laying out things, that's a very technical process, and it spoils the whole creative process. So the idea is to get our content out of our head and down on paper. So there you go. And what I did on this book, my last book, Network or Currency, Striking Networking Gold in a Relationship Economy, is 300 pages. It is, and 100 of that is on branding. And that right there was mostly written from other works that I had done. In fact, the original book that came off that was my first book was a 40-page book, 42 pages, and what I basically did is I've been writing e-zine articles, and I just put them in a book, and that was my first book to sell. After that, but I like to see people, take their articles. Like right now, I have a couple of articles on my website on confidence, and that need to go in that book, and so I'm going to take those articles as the foundation and add stories.
Right.
And that's how I fluff it up, because we learn through stories. But you can't necessarily tell a good story all the time when you're giving your, 10 points for this and your 3 points for this, like you would in a blog or an e-zine article. So that going into a book format with that article or blog post as the foundation gives you that chance to add that story. This is how it works in real life. This is how you might model this. And then that expands your chapters and gives you some real meat that's really useful for your reader. For me, I don't have time to write a 300-page book again.
Yeah, that's a good-sized book.
Yeah, it's a good-sized book. And, I don't know that I have, on the topic of confidence, that I have 300 pages worth of information. I want people to get the most out of it right away. And so I decided that it's really no big deal for me to sit down and write 1,200 words on a topic that I'm already speaking and coaching on anyway. So I committed to write 20 1,200-word chapters. And I can do that. That's something that I can do. You can read those you can read a chapter in the bathroom if it's 1,200 words.
My library, my books are everywhere. They're in. I have wall to wall, literally. One wall in my garage is books. It's just these giant bookcases in my garage. I have bookcases in my office. I have bookcases in my
my
bedroom. I have books in my bathroom. You don't find magazines in my bathroom. I don't like them. You find books. You know, if you're a guest and you need something to read, poke around because there's books
there
in there.
There you go. Yeah. It, I mean, and I don't know that the younger generation, you know, worships books the way we do, but
oh,
I mean,
I have
a collection of CEO signed books. I love those.
Oh,
you know, to me, those are special.
I've got two shelves dedicated to, you know, books that have been autographed to me by the authors. And there's some great names in there. And, I won't loan them. I will not. To be honest with you, I don't even read them. I go buy a second book so I can annotate it, mark it up. But my autograph books, they don't get touched. They're just in a space all by themselves.
Yeah. So if you're concepting a book, it's a good idea to, you know, kind of think ahead, what am I going to call this? I have a working title that's called Like You Own It. I haven't figured out the subtitle or jacket line, as I call it in the industry. But I went out and bought the domain name, so I already own the domain name for it.
Right. And that's another important step that people kind of miss. So if anybody's taking notes, write that one down.
There you go. And something that I get a question a lot about, and I have mixed feelings about it, but darn it, I'm going to start a project too at a publishing company. It's the anthology. Basically what that is a compilation of authors that are writing toward a central topic. In the industry, there's a couple of companies that do a lot with that. I have mixed feelings about it. I haven't seen them sell very well. And I think one of the reasons that they don't sell well is because that person is contributing a chapter on a topic that isn't really one that they speak on.
Oh.
I've seen some people do well if it was a topic that they were already speaking on.
Right.
The way the model works is you submit a chapter that is a certain length. It could be, I did one a few years ago that was 300, everybody did 3,000 words. This other company, they do 6,000 words, and that's about a 20-page, chapter, which, frankly, is a little long.
Yeah, seems like it would be.
Still, yeah, I mean, for self-help or self-development these days, or professional development, let's call it that. I just think that's a little bit long. But, if you don't have anything written already and you struggle with stringing 6 words together, what they offer is really good. And the companies have changed with digital publishing to give you opportunities to have your picture on the cover with the main author, and they usually pick somebody like, Ken Blanchard somebody who's like a really big name in that genre. The challenge, though, is that I think you get stuck with a lot of books, and that's the question.
Yes.
And I am seeing the companies that do that not sell.
I have clients who've done that, and they've got books. They're in the garage. They're in the trunk.
Yeah, they're like 3,000.
It's insane. It's insane. I don't think they should do it.
Well, and I don't really think that the fact that somebody else who's a big name on that cover makes a big difference to the buyer. I mean, that's the reason that you get into it and you go, wow, this is great. I want to do this.
Right.
My picture will be on the cover next to this big name. And I just don't think that the buyer really cares. What they bought was that book on that topic that you told them was so important. And they want to take some of you home.
Right.
So that's really something to think about. But it is a quick, easy way to get a book to sell in the back of the room. And the profit's not too bad. I just worked on a model for that. The number one driver to my website, my Soulworth Eagles website, is the topic of teamwork. My gosh, I'm going to start an anthology on teamwork and start collecting authors for that. And I've actually changed the whole model and looked at how I provide them some things that the other companies that do anthologies don't. And part of that goes with lower quantities that they have to buy. So Most of my authors. Yeah, most of my authors start with a quantity of 250 books because there's a nice break point right there, and I figure everybody knows 250 people.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Christmas gifts, if nothing else. You know what I'd like? Well, this I have a question about this, though, and I have no idea why this happens. And it's a little bit out of you know, left field, but you may know why this happens. The same day that I grabbed this box of book from the box of books from the post office, there was an and it was from I knew the company, but here comes another big plastic envelope with this book that I have no idea where this book came from, and it's not a book that I can imagine they would even think that I would be interested in. But here's this book. There's no note. There's no anything. It's just a book. Now, what the heck? Why? Number one, why did I get it? Number two, if they want me to review it, why don't they ask me to review it? I was not offended by it. I was very puzzled by it. And it's sitting here on my desk. I'm still puzzled by it. Why would this company send me a book? They don't know me, to my knowledge. We don't have any kind of a working relationship. And it had to have cost them. And if they're and it cost them more than just the price of printing the book and sending it to me. It costs them in credibility, because now I'm wondering what the heck they're doing.
Yeah, you know, as a bureau, I used to get books much more than I do now, but they would a speaker who would be a big name that you might know would send me a book. No enclosure letter or anything. It was something that they assigned to. Yeah, I don't know if they told their publishing company to send books to this group of, you know, people on my mailing list or what, but there failed to be an enclosure note.
Right.
Now, what I see people do that's really smart is they send a note and say it's coming, or they send it, and then they have if they don't have the enclosure note, or maybe they have the enclosure note as well, and then they send a follow-up note, or they send a follow-up email. So you really have to connect all your marketing together.
Exactly.
Yeah, sometimes when
But I looked at this book and I thought, okay, I feel like I'm almost honor bound to read it, but I'm not going to. Yeah, it's like they put me under a sense of obligation that I'm a little bit resentful about, mildly. You know, because it just, they didn't think enough of me as a reader or a reviewer, or I don't know what they expected, to say, hey, Denise, you know, we'd like to give you this book. You know, if you don't mind reading it and going on Amazon and leaving a review.
Yeah.
If they had just taken that one simple step, I probably would have read the darn book. As it stands now, I have to admit, I get a little bit aggravated every time I look at it, just because it's such crappy marketing.
Yeah, well, you know, you kind of have to look back and go, okay, I know how what happens in some people's offices, and maybe they just forgot their assistant.
No, this isn't the first time.
Forgot to put the enclosure one. Really?
This is not unusual, not unusual at all. I will get books from people I have never heard of, no follow-up, no relationship that I'm aware of with them, don't know the author. You know, most of the authors that send me books, I already know them. And, I mean, I've got a whole little area of books over there on my bookcase in my office that they're kind of like my question mark books. Like, why are these here? But I'm physically incapable of throwing a book away. So there they sit. It's just it's an interesting disconnect, I think, and one that has got to be costly.
I don't understand, and maybe someday I will, but I don't understand why people mail a book to somebody who just at random and just assume. And maybe it's because you're a radio show host and they just go, wow, she talks to other authors, I'm going to send this, and they forgot to put it in the thing or thought they didn't need to. But it's so expensive to mail anything, and books are not cheap. Yeah, especially
and this is a really nice book.
Yeah, it's
a nice book. It's a big, thick book. I mean, the cover art is beautiful. It's just a topic that I have zero interest in. I mean, zero.
Right.
And it's hard for me to find a book that I don't find something in.
I know. Here's something to consider. And for my clients that call on corporate clients, I remind them that not every corporate client can accept a gift. I know. My husband works for a company that has an ethics policy, and, you know, part of that is not accepting gifts from vendors. And
I never thought of that.
Yeah, he works in the training area, and he has had people who were calling on them who actually, you know, wanted to give all his vendors all his clients a copy of his new book, and so they sent it. Well, he said, you know, gosh, it is a good book. We'd like to keep it, but he had to write them a check. My husband had to get a check cut for him because they could not accept the free book, even if they have a corporate library. So that's something to really think about when you're using that with your clients, I mean, especially for consultants, you know, because, again, it's evidence of their expertise. So.
Right. And that leads me back to another question I have is, a published book, I think it was Lynn Kopal, and I think I'm saying her name right. She was on my show a year or two ago. And she did this. She wrote a little book, and she uses it as a card. She uses it. She sends it out. It's a small book. It's a very quick, easy read. It's fun. And she will literally have that thing printed on demand and send it out to people like me, people who are interviewing her. And she uses it kind of as a calling card, which I thought was brilliant.
Yeah, it's a nice thing. When you are using an independent publisher and you've kind of paid your costs up front, you pay a lot less for your books per piece, and so it gives you a really good chance. You know, like my 300-page book, I mean, that cost me $6. So, yeah, it's a nice revenue stream, but I don't think much about giving that away when I'm speaking from a platform.
Right.
You know, because it's $6, and you get into some of these smaller books. I was looking at the price, my price to print, my cost on the book the confidence book will probably be around $2.50. I mean, to mail it is going to cost me almost that much.
I know.
You know, and you're thinking, especially when you're looking at a book as a calling card, man, put that thing out there in PDF. Send it to people in the PDF file.
I think that's more the norm now. This was a couple years ago. And this is how quickly things change. I mean, you know, a little book as a calling card was brilliant then. I suspect she's not doing it anymore now. She probably just puts it on Kindle and sends them a link or sends them the PDF or, you know, something.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely could. Let's spend a few minutes talking about speaking, because I know I get a lot of questions about that.
Okay.
You know, if someone wants to speak and to brand themselves, they need to get out there and do it. In the industry, people who want to speak generally want to speak at meetings. I recommend that they get in front of, you know, there's practice, and you can get that at a Toastmasters club. I use Toastmasters to develop my new content, audition my new content. I might use civic clubs or local professional associations to, you know, share my information in front of a bigger audience. And one of the things that I always remember, my friend Darren LaCroix, he has a program called World Champions Edge. He's a Toastmasters World Champion of public speaking. He says the best way to get booked is
been
to
around
be
for a while.
Great. Yeah. So the best way to get booked is to be great on the platform. And how true that is. I mean, people are going to recommend you. You can do all the marketing you want, but getting yourself on that platform is great the one time. You're not going to get any spin-off business if you weren't great there. So being great is about getting practice. I think I also remember someone else, another world champion, might be David Brooks. He said the difference between a good speech and a great speech is doing it 500 times.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah, so it is about practice. And in that process, you become more comfortable with your content and you connect to the audience. And connection is where it's at.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so when
if I want somebody to talk at me, I'll call an, you know, in-law or something. But if I want somebody to connect with me where I'm sitting on the edge of my seat going, oh, whoa, this is really interesting.
Yeah.
Then, you know, I want the speaker in front of me to really engage me and everybody else.
Yeah, and if this person is truly speaking and writing about the things that they've earned the right to speak and write about, they need to really look at industry conferences. And just to do a breakout session, you know, for a consultant, or maybe somebody who wants to make a jump in the industry, they can do a breakout session and get up there and share their expertise, and a potential job searcher could be in that audience that might want to recruit them to their company. It could be somebody who wants to hire that consultant. I love breakout sessions for that reason. Now, often breakout sessions aren't going to pay anything. I discourage people from the participating in an opportunity where they have to pay to be on that platform. I don't think for most people that's a good move. But you're likely speaking for free. But if you're going to that industry conference anyway, you know, you're going to be there. Why not speak to that audience? And a lot of times that gets your feet wet to where you can transition eventually with your content to being a platform speaker. People have to see you before they'll put you in front of their platform.
True. One of my clients, one of my clients who I've strongly encouraged him to write a book, and now he's got two out and one coming, did a lot of speaking. He's in the Christian arena.
Mm-hmm.
And he did his job seriously in churches
mm-hmm.
and conferences and events that they were doing. And he loved it. I mean, it was really where his heart was. So he just, every time there was an opportunity for him to be in front of a group, didn't matter to him if it was 3 people or 300 people.
There you go.
He was there.
You know.
And he didn't miss the opportunities. He never, ever said, oh, it's just too small for me. His ego was never in the way. He had a message, and he was going to, if they invited him, he showed. And it's paid well. I mean, it really... You know, he was able to replace his income, which was substantial. This is a man who lives in Manhattan. You don't live there if you're broke. And,
right.
You know, he was able to quit his corporate job, which he had just had enough of, and do exactly what his heart speaks to, which is speaking and writing.
Yeah. And, you know, if somebody wants to speak and they're serious about it, they need, at minimum, a one sheet, which is...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's a marketing piece. Bloggers have them, authors have them, speakers have them. I don't know who else, but for a speaker, it's got their publicity photos. It's got their short bio. It's got some testimonials usually. Some people put the companies that they've worked with. I don't really encourage that. It's got their contact info. It has their topics. And if you are, and for instance, if somebody is speaking in the secular or corporate market and they're also speaking in the Christian market, then they probably need to have 2 separate one sheets. And I recommend this also for websites. A website is really important. There's just no barrier to entry to have a website today. And, you know, your website needs to have video. It doesn't have to be fancy post-production video, but it has to be video of you speaking live because people want to know what they're hiring. It needs your pictures. They need to be able to download your bio and your introduction, which are separate. They're 2 different things. And it needs to have your topics. And you need to not speak on 800 topics. You need to speak on less than 5. Again, crafting the whole thing about the one sheet is it's a marketing piece, just like the website, and you are directing it toward the target audience where you want to speak.
And that's the first thing meeting planners look for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to print that thing out, they're going to put it on their desk, and they're going to return to it when they need you. So, yeah, that one sheet is very, very important. And you said something earlier, too. You need probably 2 versions of your website. You need your regular website, which is, you know, it has all your contact information, all the meeting planner information, but you probably, depending on where you're at in your career, need a bureau-friendly website, which is a whole other topic.
Yeah, and I've struggled with the idea of the bureau-friendly website. I don't push my speakers to that because if somebody wants to Google them, they can find them today.
Mm-hmm. That's what I say, but a lot of bureaus insist on having
it. Some of the bureaus are holdouts. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we just have to duplicate it and strip out all all contact information. I'm like you. I don't get it. They'll find you. But, you know, the bureaus are just kind of hanging on to that. Do you know we are out of time? We have about 24 seconds. You're going to have to come back. We've still got 20
minutes. I have things I didn't tell you.
I'm sorry?
I have things I didn't tell you.
I know.
There's more.
I know. Definitely need to schedule you to come back. Well, listen, Carrie, tell people one more time where they can find you.
You can find my company, Soar with Eagles, at soarhigher.com. And you can always find my radio show at the website, businessengaged.com, or on Blog Talk Radio as well. So, under the business tab.
There you go. Well, listen, everybody, thank you for being here. The show will be available for download in about an hour. You can also find me in iTunes. Just type in my name. And this is Denise Griffiths and Carrie Perrin-Smith wishing you a wonderful weekend. And I will see you next week. Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you.
Find Denise Griffiths at your office on theweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.